Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And this is the Watchathon of Rassilon. Talking about the fourth and final serial of the seventh season of Doctor Who, Inferno. It consists of seven episodes that aired from May 9th, 1970 to June 20th, 1970.
True facts!
And I'd like to give a special shout out to Matt Golden of mgoldentumbles.tumblr.com for getting us those episodes.
Thanks, Matt.
You are shiny. Today on the Poodcast with us...
I'm okay.
Today on the podcast with us...
No, say Poodcast, you said it before, commit to it.
Today on the Poodcast, we have returning favorite, Evil Chris Cherry!
What?
Is that your evil accent?
God, I hope not, because I'm not doing it the whole time. No, because it's not the voice that changes. This is very important. This is a thing that I realized watching this again, is that the way that this works, spoiler alert for the serial, there's an evil mirror universe...
What?
Yeah, the way that the evil mirror universe works is if you had facial hair in one universe, you have weird eye shit in the other universe. Like, the Brig has a mustache in one universe and has an eye patch in the other, and Stallman has, like, a goatee or a Van Dyke, you know, in one, and then he's got cool sunglasses in the other.
Those sunglasses were super sweet.
They were.
I wanted them.
He's so stylish. But in the other one, he's got a weird goatee. Like, that's the way it works.
Also, and everyone's more stylish in the mirror universe.
I was about to say, if your personality doesn't change at all, your clothes do.
You have a cooler looking jacket.
That doesn't happen for three episodes, though.
No.
Is there anything you want to talk about? Anything going on in your life, Mr. Cherry?
That sounds like a thing that we do with plugs.
Well, I think, like, hey, what's been going on? And plugs are different.
Nobody has... two sets of things to say, though.
Exactly. It's always the same thing.
Yeah, but I feel like we should be like, how you doing, before we just jump into what's happening.
Joe's trying to be polite. He's trying to make awkward
you
small talk
before we
begin.
You introduce the guest before you're like, all right, this fucker's here. Let's move on.
We're like, so how was your day? Are you doing anything interesting?
I had to work today, and normally I don't. Today, for the humble listeners, is a Thursday. I never could quite get the hang of Thursdays. And so because of that, I don't work on Thursdays. Because of work being crazy or whatever, I had to go in and work, and it's terrible, and I hate it. My whole body woke up this morning and then just said no. Like, you can't do that, because it's wrong. We're also rewatching Buffy.
Wow, I'm really sad I asked.
Oh, right.
And Dollhouse, right? You watched Dollhouse.
And Dollhouse, yeah. We talked about that before we started recording.
You watched the whole first season?
Whole first season.
Did that
I'm
include...
sorry, is this a podcast about Dollhouse?
It is now. Did you watch Epitaph 1?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Just checking. That episode's amazing.
All right, talking about Doctor Who now.
All right, but I just really like Dollhouse. Just saying. You guys watch Dollhouse. All right, let's talk about Doctor Who and Inferno. Episode 1, Secret of the Ooze.
I like that one.
So, we open up in a hospital. Tom Hanks has amnesia, and he hooks up with this other lady, and they try to figure out what's going on with his amnesia, but also, like, look for clues in, like, art and shit, and history.
No.
No one saw that.
Me either.
It took me, like, a good bit to realize what you were talking about, because I forgot about it, like everyone else did.
Talking about Inferno. That was the thing I had to look up to make sure I didn't mess it up.
Oh, wow. You put a lot of effort into that joke. That did not land, by the way.
Before the podcast started. Before it started, folks. Like, he was like, hold on, wait. We can't start yet. I gotta look something up.
I needed to know the plot to the film Inferno.
Exactly. Because I'm not looking at him right now where it's just an audio connection. But he sounded super smug and, like... mischievous about it.
Yeah, you sounded confident. I don't think it was justified.
Yeah, that was not at all warranted.
I just wanted to do my War Games joke again.
Oh, yeah, that real funny joke from the last time. Hi, folks. Evil Chris Cherry.
I love Evil Chris Cherry. Everyone loves the Evil Chris Cherry. That's the greatest thing about
Wait, if you're Evil Chris Cherry, do you not have any facial hair and you don't wear glasses?
Do you get an eye patch?
Yeah, I think that's what I have right now. I have an eye patch over both eyes.
That's why you can't see us.
Exactly.
We should steal all of his shit.
He can't see?
He can't see us.
Take it.
Your one item.
He doesn't own any shit to take. Let's maybe talk about...
I feel like if somebody robs Chris Cherry winds up with more stuff. Secret of the Ooze. Credits. Stop. And then suddenly, volcanoes.
Explosions! It's very...
Lava.
Very dramatic.
And then they have very little to do with the plot of the serial.
But it's cool, though. I like that. Like, it's fun. It gets you with, like... It makes it feel like an event.
It's true. Every time an episode starts, you're like, yeah, inferno. Lava. This is gonna be cool.
It's okay.
And you have to talk like that.
I don't like it as much as, of death! Clunk.
If that it had been great. Called Inferno of death.
Yes. I think every serial should have of death after it. An unearthly child of death. Love and monsters and death.
Curse of the fatal death of death.
We open on a guy who's super dead already.
Well,
he's not dead yet, but he's just like walking into his job and like whistling and you're like, dead.
Well, before he whistles, the doctor is driving.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that because it happens and then you don't see him again for like another like 20 minutes.
But he's singing opera.
He is, that's true.
This is the most like free thing that has ever happened. He's like driving around loudly singing opera in Bessie. Just that's the most three that like you ever get. He's driving around
recklessly
into like a big drilling facility.
Oh, and there's like a big sign that says like do not enter that he's like driving into. Like he has permission, but I know that makes him happy.
So much of like the Third Doctor era happens like around like drilling equipment or the like. It's always some sort of like scientific bunker warehouse factory type thing. You know, it's a lot of those.
So yeah, we have that scene and then we don't see him. Because like, we don't see him for a long, long time to the point where you're like, oh yeah, this is a Doctor Who episode that we're watching. But you have I think he's like a maintenance guy. He's coming to fix the drill.
A pipe.
Oh, pipe?
A pipe on the drill. I think it's like a vent pipe.
The point is, you know he's super dead.
You know the drill.
Ha!
Oh, no.
This, by the way, is based on like a real thing. They're trying to like break through the crust. And the guy who wrote this episode had heard about it, that they were doing it. And it like got shut down for reasons unexplained because it was top secret.
Oh, and he was like, what if it was Doctor Who monsters?
Kind of. The monsters were not in his original script. It was a four-parter that got expanded into a seven-parter, and to pad it out, they added the monsters. The monsters were not part of this.
That makes so much sense.
A lot of people thought that the alternate universe was added in, but that was always there.
No, but definitely the monsters that feel like an afterthought.
The monsters have a name, by the way. They're not said anywhere in the episodes themselves, but they are in the credits. I think they're called Primords.
Primords.
Because you were like, what are they? And they don't really get explained why they are what's happening.
It's not like, oh, the monsters are happening because of this, and this is how we stop them.
Clearly, they've just been so scared that they de-evolved.
Also, this episode was originally called The Mo-Hole Project, because that was the name of the real project.
Mo-Hole, Mo Problems.
Yeah, Inferno is a much stronger name.
The Mo-Hole of death.
The mole hole of death.
It's not even fun to say. It's just like, it's like your two-thirds. Like, mole hole. I got woo canal.
And I think there was also like, bore hole. There was a couple of different titles before someone
and
was
like guys,
just
no one wants to hear the word hole.
Let's just call it Inferno and like reference volcanoes for no reason. Mole bore. That was another one. Operation Mole Bore. The Mole Bore. That guy's terrible at titles.
Joe Fax!
But the maintenance guy is working on this pipe drill thing, and it starts to ooze green shit, and so he just sticks his hand in it.
Why? Why does he stick his hand in it? That's the dumbest thing.
And it's really hot.
Like, that just seems, like, obvious, don't touch it. Especially not with, like, without gloves. And I feel like every single thing that happens after this is on this guy. Every single thing.
This is the origin of Waluigi, right?
Yes, it is.
I'm going to start calling him Waluigi because I don't know his name.
Do whatever you want. He's super dead.
I don't think... Does he get a name?
I think he probably has one. He's
not super dead.
He actually doesn't die for a very long time. Like, he survives this entire episode.
Oh, you're right.
He becomes the first Primord.
The Prime Primord.
Which sounds like a Power Rangers villain.
The Primords, by the way, are basically blue werewolves.
Green.
Are they green?
It's green ooze.
They looked blue to me.
They look kind of blue. They reminded me of Reavers a little bit for a while, talking about Joss Whedon things.
Before they go full on Harry?
Before they go full on Harry.
There's stages to this, you guys, to this Primord thing. And then we meet Stallman, who you've previously mentioned, who is the head of this pipe thing. And he's the guy that's like the dude from Fury from the Deep, who's like, we have to do things faster or else.
We have to do things fast and ignoring any kind of safety protocol because I am the worst.
Yeah, he's like the most obnoxious, like fully realized version of this trope, and he's awful.
The worst thing is that normally when we've gotten this trope before, it's like, turns out that's happening because he's kind of evil or he's under mind control. This guy's just a dick.
Like, he gets infected, but he was already a dick.
I just realized how similar this is to Fury from the Deep. There's a guy who's like, we gotta do the thing with the pipes, we gotta go faster and do more. And then he gets, like, gross shit on his hand.
For, like, a guy who's, like, a scientist, he seems very wary of experts. For, like, a guy whose whole thing is being an expert at something, he does not trust expertise. He does not trust, like, science, like, really at all.
He's got a computer giving him figures, and he's like, ah, the computer's dumb. I'm gonna do my own figures. I'd have gotten there on my own, which is what he always says.
And then we have this guy named Sir Keith.
I like Sir Keith.
He's the guy that's like, we need to slow down. I'm calling in this expert to come look at things. He works on drills.
He's Australian and misogynist.
He's an oil guy. He's a fracker.
This is a mini Joe fact, I guess. The guy who plays Sir Keith goes on to play another character in Classic Who that gets his own spinoff in Big Finish. I believe you've talked about him before.
Oh, is he Hidden Gordon Jago? Yeah. That's like way later. Oh man, he looks different. I don't think I caught that.
He plays him in that and in the Big Finish stuff. And he's in New Who. He's in The Unicorn and the Wasp.
He is. I don't know how I never noticed that either. Because I actually really love that episode. It's not a popular opinion, but it's really good.
It's a good episode. I like The Unicorn and the Wasp.
Well, no, yeah, we have similar opinions. But there's a lot of people who don't like it because they're wrong.
So that's the Sir Keith facts. Can we get a Sir Keith facts?
Sir Keith facts! Don't call him Mister.
So Keith is called in the drill guy. And then the maintenance Waluigi guy stumbles out of the building and attacks another guy. Just like starts fighting a dude.
Oh yeah. He doesn't really have a reason to be doing that. It's not like he was scared and he did it. He was just like, I'm evil now.
Rawr.
Yeah, that's it.
I don't understand these creatures very well.
In my head, they're just Reavers. They touched the goo and they went mad. And now they gotta kill everything. They got Krakatoa madness.
We cut to the Briggs office. Or is it his office? I guess it's... Is it at that base?
It's his office there.
The first thing that, like, the Brig does when he shows up is he points to the room and goes, that's mine.
Yeah, he had one in the Silurians.
But this one, he's, like, decorating.
Yeah, they're, like, hanging pictures.
Is it Benton who's hanging stuff up for him?
Yeah. How long is he gonna be there?
A while. Is this the scene where they talk about... They have the fun conversation about him not having a mustache?
Yes.
Yes.
I remember watching this and then realizing... Oh, they're setting up the fact that at one point in the past, he didn't have a mustache to, like, give us an idea that there could be a reality where he never decided to grow it. It's supposed to be a thing that when you think, oh man, the Brig without a mustache, and then, like, three episodes from now, when you see him without a mustache, you go, there he is!
It's great, though, because, like, they do that thing you do where you're like, guess which one is me? And the doctor has no idea, because he can't see faces.
Because it's like a whole bunch of, like, soldiers or whatever in the picture.
But he just laughed for, like, 5 minutes at the idea of Brig without a mustache. He was like, good call. Good crawl on growing that thing, because you look ridiculous.
Any universe where you don't have that's probably evil.
And, like, he's, like, making fun of the Brig for his lack of mustache, and Benton, like, starts laughing, too. And the Brig just shoots him a look like, you better stop.
Like, the doctor can laugh at me. He's the only one.
I barely have a handle on the doctor. I have a handle on you, Ben.
I'm definitely above you. There's a ranking order.
Okay, so Waluigi, when he attacked the guy, hit the guy with a wrench.
Yes.
Which the brig now has.
In, like, his inbox. His, like, files inbox.
Like, I have this murder weapon just sitting on my desk. Didn't show that to, like, the police or anything.
Well, he's the unit.
Well, yeah, but why is it in his office?
He is the law.
Why isn't it with, like, experts or something?
Because fuck experts.
He's showing it to the doctor.
Yeah, that's his scientific advisor.
And he's like, doctor, what do you think of this thing? And he's like, it's mildly warm. And he's like, it was burning hot when we got it. So what's up with that? And the doctor's like, I don't know.
The doctor's like, there must have been a lot of energy in it. Because that's what makes things hot.
I'm a scientist.
It's the doctor like, I sure said words that sounded impressive, right? I don't know. The answer is I don't know.
So then the oil rig drill guy shows up. His name is Sutton. He's been on the show previously. He played a caveman in an unearthly child.
Neat.
Started from the bottom, now we're here.
He's dressed a lot like Sam Neill's character in Jurassic Park.
He's a lot like Sam Neill's character in Jurassic Park. And that he's the one who's been brought in to be an expert. And then he's like, this is a bad idea.
He looks like everybody's dad. Everyone's dad.
But not like in a sexy way.
No. Why you gotta bring that up?
Evil Chris Cherry!
But yeah, he also is like, I don't entirely know why I'm here. This isn't the type of drilling that I do. But yeah, whatever you're doing, it's bad. You should stop.
I don't know anything about anything, but do you know this is a bad idea?
And also, that lady's hot.
I'm gonna antagonize her a little bit.
Because that's what flirting looks like.
It's also at this point that Keith's showing him around, and he's like, this is where we do all the work. We call it the Inferno, because that's the name of the episode. Also, it is incredibly loud in there, and it is sometimes hard to hear the dialogue.
There's definitely parts where I'm like, am I supposed to be hearing this dialogue at all?
Because there's a lot of... It's very loud in there. Like, I know you want to give the illusion that it's a busy place, but also I want to hear the dialogue. I want to hear Sutton hitting on this woman. Her name is Williams, by the way. She's like the, I guess, Stallman's assistant?
Yes.
Yeah, kind of like right-hand woman, Girl Friday, what have you.
I thought it was Thursday.
She's the closest thing Stallman has to, like, a true believer.
She doesn't really stick with him very long, though.
No, she's got too much sense.
That's the thing. Like, kind of, sort of, her arc is realizing, oh, this guy's crazy. Yeah, we need to stop. That's her arc.
And yeah, this romance is a little like all the other previous romances we've had on the show. But I don't mind this one as much. It's a little better developed than some
others.
I don't hate
it the most.
Part of it is that, like, she clearly has a lot of agency in the story from, like, go. It feels a bit like he's being a dick, but he's not, like, exploiting any sort of power structures or anything to be a dick.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's just kind of an asshole. But that's just how he is.
And also, I mean, some of his assholishness is like, you guys are doing stupid fucking shit. Stop it. Which is fair.
I feel like a lot of times with this, like, we get, like, the one or two scenes, and they're just annoying. Like, we just get the bickering scenes, and then, like, and it's over! So they love each other now. Whereas this relationship has more time to develop beyond just, like, they're bickering, and now they're in love! Because that's how love works!
Exactly. You know when you stop hating a person? That's love. That's it.
I feel like in this, it's not necessarily that they hate each other. It's that he hates this situation.
Yeah.
Oh, no, he quite likes her. He's just sort of, like, abrasive about it.
Yeah, what are you doing involved in this shit? Why isn't anybody listening to me? I'm here to help you guys out, to make things safer.
I come from a land down under.
And all you guys want to do is, like, fuck shit up more. Okay, so the reason they're digging beneath the crust is to get gas from beneath the crust.
Because it's... super powered, and it'll supply lots of energy and be super great.
Is that true?
Sounds about right. In the grand scheme of things, it doesn't matter.
I mean, in real life.
I mean, in real life, it super doesn't matter. In real life, none of this matters. Like, if we're gonna bring real life into it, that's a problem.
So what you're saying is nothing at all matters. Anything. At all.
Yes.
Nihilist Chris Cherry!
That is not... something that needs to be denoted as different.
But for the purpose of this podcast, they're trying to drill in to get at the power. Basically, the center of the Earth is a big... it's very dense. There's a lot of energy there. Basically, it's like, hey, what if we could, like, harness a volcano? What if we could make a volcano and put, like, a mill on it? Like, run a wheel on a volcano and it just keeps turning and it powers everything. That's basically what's happening.
I think at this point we get a change of heart from the doctor about computers.
Because he's like, I don't like them very much, but they are useful tools.
Can I also mention really quick that one of the smart things, because Inferno is one of the most smartly constructed Classic Who serials ever. Like, it makes a lot of really smart storytelling choices in terms of, like, what information it gives you and, like, how, like, when it deploys certain things. And one of my favorite things that it does early on is have the Doctor already been working there for a while. Like, we don't have to have the scene where, like, he's like, hey, guys, this is the Doctor. Doctor? Doctor of what? Stuff. We get to skip all that. We've seen that so many times. We've seen a season of it already with this Doctor. So it's really great that he's already there and already set up. We kind of start late enough that we skip all the really, like, non-essential shit and we're already here. And I love that.
We do get it slightly twice. Once because Sutton doesn't know who he is. So he's like, who's that guy in the fancy clothes? So we still get an explanation. And then in episode 3, when he winds up in an alternate universe where he doesn't exist, we get the who the fuck is this doctor guy. So it still kind of happens.
But in a way that both those times make a bit more sense. Like, it's more important to the story that we're finding out why this person learns to trust the doctor. Like, it's not as bad. The fact that a lot of this serial for the first 3 episodes, like, the actual plot is kind of recycled and generic ends up being, like, a boon, because once we go into the alternate universe, suddenly it makes sense. Like, that means that a lot of this is kind of shorthand. The conflict is shorthand. Like, you know this guy, this Stallman guy, you've seen this guy before. You've seen the doctor doing this thing before. So, like, they get to spend more time focusing on, like, the other kind of stuff that's unique to the story.
So the next scene we have is the
doctor and his garage door opener?
Way to ruin my joke.
Oh.
You see, Inferno's a movie with Tom Hanks.
No, just, like, he drives Bessie to, he has a, a garage on site.
Where he's got the TARDIS console and stuff.
And he holds, it looks like, is it the Sonic
screwdriver? It's the Sonic, yeah.
I don't think it is, though, because they only use it for that one thing, and they call it the door handle.
It's the Sonic screwdriver.
They never call it the Sonic screwdriver.
There's a thing about John Pertwee. While the Doctor hates computers, John Pertwee loved gadgets. He wanted his Doctor to be a kind of James Bondy. He's got a car that does, got a button that you press and you stick to it, and he's got, like, a gadget that opens the door. Like, he's the Doctor. He's got all these wonderful toys. And so, like, I kind of think it is just a door handle. I think the third Doctor is a person who makes a gadget specifically to open a door.
And I feel like there's this part where they're like, yeah, he made this device to open the door. And everybody's losing their shit over it. Like, this is amazing. It's just a garage door opener.
Well, we have those.
And we think we had them before, like, the 70s. Did we? I don't know. And this is and this might still technically be the 80s.
Oh, right. I feel like we definitely had them in the 80s.
Yeah, it's not that big a deal.
And everybody's like, ooh, he opened it with that little wrench thing.
What's that kind of hexagonal thing? Not important.
When the doors open, we get a color separation overlay.
Yeah, we do.
That is, like, the worst they've done. Like, every time, it's like, they're clearly on a set, and that is clearly a blue screen.
Can I say, like, spoiler alert for the next serial, it gets so much worse.
Yay!
The next one, they were, like, leaning on it heavy. We have this technology. Let's exploit it to its fullest extent.
I just don't understand why they couldn't, like, put a backdrop or something.
Well, because they have a blue screen.
Yeah, but it looks terrible.
Yeah, but you know when you first get a toy and you're like, I want to use this to open my garage door. Also, by the way, apparently color separation overlay is a very British term. Yeah, I remember looking it up and saying, like, basically that's what they called it in the UK. That's what the BBC called it. And, like, I think they're the only ones who called it that.
I like it.
I don't.
I'm gonna say it all the time.
But the doctor is tinkering with the TARDIS console.
Because we still don't have the TARDIS yet. I don't think it comes back until next season. And also, when it comes back, the TARDIS console is going to be different.
I like the fact that he's working on it. It gives this whole kind of season the sense of like a meta arc, you know? It gives the sense that like he's working towards something, and it makes it kind of feel like the show's not quite so modular, you know, from serial to serial. It makes it feel like one long thing. Well, he's still working on this thing. This episode's actually kind of a little bit of forward momentum in that. Like it's about him. It's not just like a thing that's happening in the background. A large part of the plot about this is about the fact that he's tinkering with the console.
Yeah, and it was set up like all the way back in the first serial, and then even more so in the second serial.
It makes me sad too. Like, he's tinkering with it, and Liz is like, "You're not seriously gonna like try to use it. That's dangerous." And he's like, "I cannot be stuck in one time. It's boring. This is basically the worst." I don't know. It made me sad. I was like, yeah, that would suck. And I couldn't imagine being stuck somewhere without internet and being like, I'm just trying to make my Wi-Fi work again.
But he has basically hooked up to the nuclear power from the drill, hooked it up to his TARDIS console so he can give it power so that he can time travel, get those gigawatts. He's going to do a test run. But meanwhile, Waluigi has gotten way worse. He's like attacking people, and he messes with this thing, this control. I guess it's the power control. He like pushes the thing all the way up or all the way down. I don't remember which. But because of that, it fucks up what the doctor's doing with the TARDIS. Then some amazingly weird shit happens.
Oh my god.
I love this so much. I love when, like, the show gets just full on weird.
Basically, what proceeds to happen is the doctor gets slid into this, like, limbo universe that is made up entirely of all those, like, weird filters you get on webcam software.
So, yeah, it's just full of, like, weird video filters and John Pertwee making faces. John Pertwee makes the best faces.
He's so good at making faces. Oh my god.
So many cliffhangers from this era are just like, John Pertwee makes a face, credits. And it's amazing. Like, he's got like full on Jim Carrey rubber face.
Plus the eyes.
Those eyes, they just bug out. You're just like, oh man, I love it. It's really funny too, because like three is played so like dignified and debonair and like, you know, authoritative. Then some random piece of plastic wraps around him. Then he goes all goofy.
Or his face gets all mirrored and he goes all goofy.
It's the best screensaver of all time.
But he gets out of the weird limbo place and he's like, ah, there was too much power, I guess. So we're going to have to do it again. And Liz is like, are you serious after all of that? And he's like, because of all of that. And I really like that line. Alarms start going off at the base because of the whole situation. Keith is like, pull the shields down. We've got to stop this. Which makes Stallman very unhappy.
Yeah, no, nothing can be stopped ever.
But the doctor's like, I think I know what's going on. And they go to the control center thing where they find the guy that's been attacked. And then they find the green guy, Waluigi, who jumps out at them. And that's the cliffhanger. It's not a terribly great cliffhanger, now that I think about it.
No, it's just... No.
It just kind of happens. That's the end of episode one. We are now into episode two. Infer. Oh, no. That's the third time these guys have heard that joke.
Yeah. You know what doesn't get better with age? Well, a lot of things.
Most things.
So they shoot the green guy. Yeah. One of the unit guys does. But it doesn't really do anything, right? Because bullets never work.
Bullets never work, but it's all unit has.
I think it does go down, though, eventually. It, like, just sort of falls down. But it attacks, like, the unit guy that shot him. And then he falls down, and then the doctor can't move the control lever because it's too hot. So he uses the Briggs gun to do it, which I think is the only time I've seen the doctor use a gun so far.
I mean, it depends on what you call a gun. Like, he's wandering around in seeds of whichever one it is.
Fury of the Seeds.
There are two Doctor Who serials. One of them is called Seeds of Death. One of them is called Seeds of Doom. I can never remember which one is which.
We've seen Seeds of Death.
Okay, so he's wandering around in Seeds of Death with those, like, kind of, those guns that are just, like, you know, satellite dish guns. Like, he uses guns.
This is an actual gun, though.
This is a gun that shoots bullets specifically.
But he's just using it to move a lever. It's okay. But the green guy has fallen against the wall and has, like, left this giant scorch mark on the wall because he's so hot.
So then, like, Brig immediately goes to touch him. The doctor's like, maybe don't.
Why do people want to touch stuff?
I don't know. I don't want to touch anything.
Ever.
I don't understand why the doctor's like, whoa, don't. Because generally, he's the first one to lick something.
He's like, what is that? I'm going to find out by putting it in my mouth.
Like an infant.
So they get the unit guy that got attacked out of there. But of course, he starts going weird as well. It has spread. So the Brig and the Doctor have a chat on top of this, like, tank. This is when the Doctor starts his theories that is akin to the fear made them de-evolve speech from Silurians. But he's like, the noises the creature was making, I've heard them before, at Krakatoa, which I think is just an excuse to use the footage at the beginning of these episodes.
They're trying to manufacture a volcano. So it's not that unreasonable. Like, that's what they're doing. They're trying to, like, break the Earth's crust, and that's all that a volcano is.
Is a crust breaker?
Yeah, that thing.
Oh, fun fact about this scene. It took Jon Pertwee, like, 15 minutes to prepare for this scene, any of these scenes, because he was afraid of heights, apparently.
Oh, no!
And did not like being on top of the tanks.
That is unfortunate.
There's a lot of scenes on top of the tanks.
There are. There's a lot of him running around, which is about to happen, because the unit guy is just running around with, like, his gun, and the Doctor gives chase.
Which, he has his gun, but he's de-evolving, I guess, so he's just swinging it around.
Yeah, he swings it at the Doctor.
Yeah.
And he keeps swinging, and he swings too much, and falls off of, like, this catwalk. There's a soldier there that walks up to his body, and he's like, I'm gonna touch it. Because everybody wants to touch things. The Doctor has to yell down, don't touch it. God.
Is this when he calls someone childish? Full disclosure, I watched this serial a month ago. Because I got super ahead of you guys. And so I'm looking at my notes, but all my memories are from a month ago. So, but I know at some point in my notes, he calls someone childish. And I think, like, where do you get off?
I don't remember a specific childish comment. I know he called Stallman a nitwit twice.
Oh, harsh language.
But they now have a tube full of that ooze, and it's very hot.
That's the only knowledge we have so far.
It's hot. It's green. You don't want to touch it.
Why did they make it green and not, like, lava colored, like red and orange?
A good question.
It's a very good question. And the answer is,
They were fair all enough. Out of red dye and went, oh shit.
To be fair though, it's not like red oozes. I think if it was red, people would think it's lava.
And then they definitely wouldn't touch it.
Whereas it has to be green, because you know how, like, when you see a green ooze, you just want to touch it.
I want to touch lava so bad.
I was going to say earlier, we're talking about how, like, obviously don't touch things, but lava is the thing that everyone wants to touch.
I don't want to touch lava.
You look at it and you're like, my hand needs to be inside of that.
That's what you said about the Third Doctor in that other serial.
Ugh.
I can go.
No, you can't. You're the co-host.
Oh, I forgot. There's a thing from episode one, because I'm not paying that much attention to my notes, even though they're all I have. There's a bit in episode one when he's like, when there's like a car chase or something, or not the later car chase or something, where there was just this really fun little bit of percussive music. I remember, and I wrote it in my notes, like, this is fun little bit of percussion music. And I found out later that was almost certainly a piece of music that was made by Delia Derbyshire from, like, stock. Like, a lot of stock music that Delia Derbyshire made for the BBC got used in this serial, even though she wasn't working on the show anymore. There's a great documentary that Tony should watch and everyone listening should watch about Delia Derbyshire, who arranged the original Doctor Who theme and made a lot of the most early electronic music for the BBC and just for anywhere. And there's this great documentary about her called The Delian Mode. It's not very long. It's the length of an episode of Classic Who. It's only 25 minutes. It's very well produced and artistic, and it uses a lot of her music. And she was just a fascinating person. It's fun to just, like, kind of get into this person's head who thought about music in a very kind of unique way. And I highly recommend it. Everyone go watch that. Not right now, because you're listening to this, but afterwards.
Or you could pause it, watch it, come back.
No.
No?
No.
Okay.
No, we have momentum.
Do we?
When you edit it, we'll have momentum.
So, the canister of ooze starts exploding. Stallman says, which, by the way, in my notes, it just says eyebrows. Which was weird, because he doesn't really have eyebrows.
I think that's why you called him eyebrows.
It's an ironic name.
His eyebrows are so light that you can barely see them. Because the rest of his hair is so dark. But, like, okay, so, like, Stallman has blonde eyebrows. The rest of his hair is kind of brown, except for the top part of his hair is blonde. Like, his comb-over is blonde. He has some interesting hair.
But no cool sunglasses yet.
Not yet. That's coming up. Stay tuned, you guys.
Oh my god.
So, he orders that it be put in deep freeze because it's starting to explode and stuff. But, like, not before he touches the canister.
Yes.
And gets some of the juice on him.
Literally, they're like, it's super hot. I wouldn't do that. And he just looks him in the eye and is like, doing it.
And he's, like, so pissed off. And he's like, more drilling. And, Doctor, you don't get any more energy, so you can't do your tests anymore.
That's where he calls somebody childish.
So he storms off all mad. and then looks at his hand and it's turning green.
Which again, this doesn't matter because he was already a dick. Explains nothing, just you're an asshole.
Also, Waluigi turned immediately. This guy takes forever to turn.
Well, you know, different people have different immune systems. That sound.
I like to think Waluigi, before he turned, was like a good person. Stallman didn't have to turn as much because he was already evil. Basically, evil was being replaced with evil and so he didn't notice. Does that make sense?
No.
There's other variables. There's like one guy is much smaller. He probably didn't eat anything all day.
So it's diet?
Yeah, it's like drinking. Like, if you drink on an empty stomach, viruses work the exact same way.
Drinking is a virus?
That's a scientific fact, yeah.
Krakatoa is a virus?
Is that a Tony Science fact?
It's a Tony Science fact.
Tony Science facts! The next thing I have in my notes is Venusian karate.
When we were watching it, I was like, when does the doctor get all karate choppy? And, like, it was the next scene after I asked that. And I was like, oh, it's now! It's happening now! Right now!
Stallman takes something out of the computer.
It's a microchip, and he stomps on it and breaks it.
He almost breaks it, but the doctor catches him. And then he starts fighting the doctor. And that's when the doctor uses
his karate chops.
Well, no, because basically, the computer is going to prove Stallman wrong. And he knows it, so he's, like, sabotaging the computer.
And the doctor catches him, tells the brig, and then the brig's like, let me see your pockets, and he doesn't have anything in his pockets.
Nothing in his pockets.
Nothing up his sleeves. And then the brig's like, well, then nothing's happening. And then they let him go. And then he, like, had hidden the piece somewhere, and then he stomps on it and smushes it and crushes it. But that was after he got judo chopped. It was like a Vulcan death grip.
As I say, he has his, like, fingers in his chest and was like, if I do it for long enough, it'll paralyze you. I was like, what? Three's great. Three's awesome.
He, like, jabs him with a peace sign.
Because here's the thing about, I love Three, because I love all of them. Whenever I'm watching a Three serial, I'm like, I love Three. Three is ridiculous. He's so the doctor. He's like, he sings opera and he hates everyone. But, like, whenever, like, I think about them all, I always find Three a bit less compelling. And I think I figured out what it is. Like, he's just as kind of weird and, like, sometimes a dick as, like, all the other ones. But, like, in, like, this era, the show is 100% on his side. The Third Doctor is the first Doctor where the show became unambiguously about that the Doctor as the hero of the story. The Third Doctor is always right. Even when he's saying stupid shit like, it sounds like Krakatoa. Like, a lot of times, the science of this era is the dodgiest. But he says it with, like, an enthusiasm of, like, no, I know that's right. And lots of times when, like, one or two did that, it sounded like they were just making up bullshit.
There was somebody there to roll their eyes.
Exactly. Whereas if someone rolls their eyes about it in the Third Doctor era, that person is wrong.
And they're probably going to die later.
Though he's still, like, a dick. Like, he's a dick to a lot of people, Three. But he's always a dick to people who deserve it. He's like House. He's a genius and, like, I don't have time for pleasantries or whatever. You're being childish. What? Like, the Third Doctor era reminds me a lot of the RTD era of New Who. And I kind of have the same feeling about Three that I have about 10. Where he's very charismatic and he's very interesting. And he's definitely a very flawed character. But, like, the show doesn't quite realize it. And he doesn't get to be wrong often enough. And no one calls him on his bullshit enough. Other than, like, the brig sometimes. He's always, like, right about everything. There's a bit later, Liz is like, Epsilon coordinates, you usually work those out in your head. It's like, calm down, Mary Sue Doctor. That's the thing, is that, like, this doctor, he has two hearts, he knows karate, he can pinch people and do things, he can work out shit, is that, like, this doctor, like, can do everything.
This is the superhero doctor.
Which is like a less compelling sort of way to use the doctor in a story for me.
I feel like you almost need it, though, because he's not in space.
That makes sense, and that's valid. Like, because he's not in space, like, he has to suddenly be the most supernatural thing.
He's gotta karate chop some people, because Earth is boring.
And that's, like, fair. And, like, but it's also, like, it's a take on the character that I'm less interested in. I like the Doctor a lot when he's wrong. I like him being sort of this person that's kind of making shit up, pretend, like, kind of speaks with authority that he doesn't quite have, and the show realizes that. Whereas, like, the Third Doctor on the show is the ultimate authority all the time.
I think it's fun sometimes, though. It's fun sometimes to watch him just, like, shut somebody down.
That is very satisfying. He's very good at it.
That, like, simmering anger underneath a veneer of calm coolness. It's so good.
He is really good. Like, I love John Pertwee. And I, like, again, I'm so invested in it while it's happening. It's just more like when I consider all of the Doctors.
That makes sense.
During this whole thing with, like, Stallman and the chip, the Doctor has also switched on this computer thing sneakily, which is to get power back to his TARDIS. And he goes back to his garage. He's like, can you go and get the coordinates? And that's when she says, you usually work that out in your head. And he's like, I'm tired. Which is all a lie.
Right. He's just getting rid of her.
He gets rid of Liz because he's going to do trial run number two.
We were like, Liz, how do you not know what he's doing? How do you not call him out on this? And I guess the answer is because it's three.
And also, we got to get the plot going. Because the plot hasn't really started yet. It's about to, though. It's about to kick into high gear. She goes to get the coordinates, and then the brig is like, what are you talking about? Yeah. He's the one that, like, clues her in, like, no, he sent you here on a wild goose chase.
He's, like, sneakily hooked up the power. Stallman figures it out and shuts it off.
But it's in, like, the middle of, like, him trying to do the thing, and he disappears.
He's just gone.
And so does Bessie. Bessie goes with him, which makes me think of The Evil Dead, because, well, not The Evil Dead, but
Army of Darkness.
He goes back in time with his car, too. For no reason. The car just comes with him.
And just crashes to the ground. But yeah, no, where the Doctor goes, so goes Bessie.
No real reason. He just needs a car. That's the end of episode 2, and we're now into episode 3, which I've called Left Turn, because this episode takes one.
No, I got it. No, I understand. I'm fine with it. I approve. I think it's thematically appropriate.
And it's also a reference
to Turn Left.
You could have just called it Turn Left.
But it needs to be a different title, Chris.
I suppose so.
So they get the power turned back on.
No, they don't.
They don't?
They ask Stallman to turn the power back on, and he says no.
Oh, you're right, yes.
Because they want to get turned back on so they can bring the Doctor back.
Which
so
is like a really awkward, where they're like, he's gone. We're like, what do you mean he's gone? He was in the garage, and what are you talking about? You're like, you don't understand. He's got like a time machine in there, and you turned it off in the middle of it. We don't even know what that means.
So Sir Keith is going to go to London to get permission to, like, shut some shit down.
He's going above people's heads.
Stallman specifically, yeah. Stallman puts on some fancy gloves to hide his hands. The brig and them are talking to him, and, like, the brig doesn't seem that upset. And, like, I called him out on it. I was like, he seems kind of smirky and not. The Doctor just disappeared. But then Liz calls him out on it. And he's like, no, I'm definitely worried, but I have to keep my cool.
This is just my worried face. It's the same as my poker face.
Like, I love that scene so much, because it does, like Nicholas Courtney plays that so perfectly.
And then a disco ball shows up and goes, B-l-l-l-l-l-l-l-l-l. And the Doctor shows back up in the garage. All of his stuff is missing.
And there's a poster.
Unity is strength. The picture on it is of, like, it's like some dude who worked on the show.
Really?
Yeah, it's apparently a reference to 1984 where...
Yeah.
Because there was somebody who worked on that they used as a picture in some of the posters too, so...
Because, yeah, we're in a fascist dystopia now.
I was like, are we in the future? Is that what's happened? But
that parallel universe does seem to be running, like, a little bit faster technology-wise.
It seems to be a couple of days ahead.
It's not technically days ahead, it's just everything's advanced.
I was going to say, they definitely have... They have better tech.
His gadget doesn't work on the door. The door has a weird, very Nazi-esque symbol on it.
By the way, that's further proof that it's not just the Sonic. It's a thing he made specifically for that door. Because it doesn't work on this door.
Good point. Which, he has the Sonic screwdriver.
He does. They just haven't, like, fully learned to exploit it yet. They haven't figured out, oh, it's a magic wand.
At this point, neither one of us realized that he was in an alternate dimension yet. I mean, we had theories, I guess. But then, like... He gets in at Bessie.
I did.
You did? Well, I didn't. He starts getting shot at, and one of the people shooting at him is Benton. Okay, so there's like a chase scene. A guy jumps into Bessie.
This is a very well-directed chase scene.
We've had a lot of really well-directed action.
John Pertwee ran over someone. He, like, hit a guy with the car. What? He had to go to the hospital.
What?
Like, the bumper, like, ripped his leg open.
Oh my God.
John Pertwee felt so bad about it, like, sick, and, like, it almost disrupted filming.
Oh my God.
Because he felt so bad about it. And he, like, gave gifts to the guy's wife and everything, because he felt so bad. Like, he was okay eventually. But, like, no, it was a pretty bad injury.
Wow. Because
he was driving and he hit him with the bumper of his car, of Bessie. Lots of facts on Wikipedia about this episode.
Wikipedia facts!
But still, it's a really cool chase scene.
It is. It's super well done.
He gets out and he hides in some trash where he belongs.
Damn.
Apparently, the one scientist who the Waluigi attacked has still been attacked in this universe. And tries to attack the doctor, and the doctor shoots him with an extinguisher, which is on top of a tank for some reason. There's just fire extinguishers
everywhere.
The first thing that the Nazis decided to do was make sure that everything was up to code fire safety wise.
There's like 3 fire extinguishers per room.
This is also like a fancy drilling place. They're drilling directly into the center of the earth. It's gonna get hot.
Not a bad idea.
And maybe have some extra fire extinguishers.
Like on the outside of a building?
Fires happen on the outside.
Yes. So he's at the top of this really tall tank. Unit, I guess, are they still Unit in this universe?
I don't think so, but I also, because I don't know what they're called.
Let's call them Evil Unit.
Evil Unit.
Okay, so E-Unit shows up, Unit Evil, and they shoot the scientist thinking it's the doctor, and he falls off the tank, which at the time was the highest fall done by a British stuntman. Wikipedia fact.
Wikipedia facts!
That's a really high fall, too. It looked really cool. So before he gets caught, he sees Liz, which is why he gets caught, because he's like, hey, Liz. But she does not have her red hair anymore. She has...
Her hair's red?
Yes.
It's like a strawberry blonde, maybe. It's like, you know, it depends. It looks more blonde than red, but that's like a quibble. Right now, it's evil.
It's evil. It's evil brown. To be fair, a lot of these episodes are tinted red a little bit.
I don't know if it's an early video thing or what.
I've seen pictures of her with red hair, and I've seen pictures of her with blonde hair.
I'm going to say red. Just right. Looks red to me. Orange. Let's just split the difference.
All right.
What? How is orange splitting the difference?
Orange is kind of between yellow and red.
It is what you get when you mix yellow and red. I got to go with him on this.
Yeah, but blonde's not yellow.
Blonde is yellow.
Blonde is the yellow that hair is.
You know, you don't hear, like, what color hair does he have? Yellow. You hear blonde. Blonde is yellow.
It is.
Blonde is a type of brown.
What? No, blonde is yellow.
Blonde is gold colored, right?
Yeah, and gold is a type of brown.
Gold is yellow. When you were a child.
What the hell?
And you got your Crayola 6 crayon set, and you colored a picture of pirates and his treasure chest, and you were coloring those gold coins. What color did you pick? Yellow, I say.
Well, I had the metallic gold crayons, because I was cool.
Okay. We couldn't all be cool as a child.
With the sharpener in the back? Yeah. It's like, I wasn't fucking around.
Do you know your colors?
No.
Blonde is brown. No, brown is brown. Blonde is yellow.
All right, fine. Blonde is yellow. Orange is in between. Can we talk about the Doctor Who?
All right, so we've got Evil Liz, and we're about to get Evil Brig.
Evil Liz is not a scientist, by the way.
She's just a Nazi.
She's an Evil Unit person, but she's high up. She's high ranking in Evil Unit.
She takes him to the Brig, and the Brig turns around in his chair all dramatically.
It's the best.
And he has no mustache. And he has an eye patch and a scar.
Which is like everything you expect from an evil version of a person.
I laughed so hard when it happens.
It's like as iconic as like Spock with a goatee.
Behind the scenes story, the first take of that, when he turned around, everyone else was wearing eye patches as well. And he just did not act like anything had changed. He just went on with it.
He just kept doing it.
Because he is a soldier, goddammit.
He apparently told this story a lot. And Stephen Moffat loved that story so much that as a tribute to him, in the Wedding of River Song, everyone's wearing eye patches.
That makes sense.
That's the only reason I could think of.
Because I think it may have been shortly after he passed away, maybe?
No, yeah, he had just passed away. They mention it in the episode.
Yeah, that was a reference to that story.
That's cute. Again, the only reason why it makes any sense.
Then we get the classic Dr. What? John Smith. That scene happens.
But with the Brig, and he's evil, so it's like, that's different. It's weird seeing the Brig not know who the Doctor is, because at this point, they're like, sort of friends. Well, they're still kind of on the rocks right now.
Yeah, because that whole Silurian business.
But like sort of seeing them like suddenly not have the history anymore that they have. It's jarring.
I was more upset about him and Liz than him and Brig, though.
Also that. But also, like, the Brig is more antagonistic. Like Liz and the Doctor sort of kind of repair their friendship. Whereas
the Brig does not, yeah.
The thing about the Brig that's sort of interesting is that, like, the Brig stays evil throughout everything. I think it's sort of telling that they've decided that of all the characters from the show, the Brig is the one that went the most full tilt evil.
He does a real good job at it, too.
Oh my gosh, it's so much fun. He is awesome. Like, he's clearly having fun.
Yeah, there's a bit later in this episode where, like the Doctor says something like, this isn't real, or whatever, and the Brig's like, it's like, then you won't feel the bullets when we shoot you. And it's just like, cold motherfucker, one black coffee.
Because the doctor does say, I'm from another universe, this is this, blah, 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 this is what's happened. The brig refuses to believe it.
Yeah, for, like, nobody believes him.
Nobody does for the longest time.
They interrogate him. And he's, like, not doing great. He's, like, breathing heavy from being interrogated and stuff. But when they, like, pull out, it's just, like, they've got a desk lamp on him. I'm like, oh, that looks awful. You've got a desk lamp. Right in your face.
I bet you have to squint.
They're going to put him in, like, a cell until he'll talk to him.
The punishment cells. That's what they're called.
Yeah, there's no subtlety in this parallel universe. None.
And then we get, like, a tour of, like, what all's changed. And, like, honestly, not a lot has.
No, yeah, practically everyone works because they have to now. People who had, like, facial hair now have cool eye shit. But one of the weirdest differences is that, like, Petra is more feminist now.
It's true. She went from being a secretary to, I think, being one of the scientists.
In this evil alternate universe, it's slightly more feminist. Sun's, like, hitting on her, and she's like, no, fuck off. Because she's evil? This show has a weird relationship with feminism.
I didn't think so, but then I also didn't. I was just like, yeah, she's great here.
This is because it's a weird thing about this show wherein, like, it writes these characters, like, that by their nature have to be very proactive feminist characters. By their nature, say things that are very explicitly feminist things, but then have to get shot down. And so it's this thing of, like, you have this great character saying this thing, and then now the doctor is going to be kind of paternalistic about it. And it's like,
I'm going to give a quick list of everything so we get caught up on this world. Sutton's still concerned with safety. Stallman's still a dick, still turning green, so I guess he still touched some shit he wasn't supposed to. The doctor doesn't exist at all in this world. There's no record of him whatsoever.
Well, I think, isn't that a thing? Mm-hmm. I feel like there's some rule about Time Lords existing in parallel universes.
I don't know off the top of my head.
UNIT is now called the Republican Security Force.
Yes, because it's the Republic now.
Exactly, aka Evil UNIT.
So they're about to take the doctor away, but the doctor jams his fingers into Benton's chest, gets away, because everything starts going to shit. Like, alarms going off, things are going bad because this is what Stallman wants. But the doctor is, like, fiddling with the computer, and Benton comes up, and he's like, stop it, or I'll shoot you. And the doctor's like, hey, give me a second, I gotta finish this. And, like, Benton's like, no, I'm really gonna shoot you. And that's the cliffhanger. These cliffhangers are not the best, to be honest.
Yeah, but that's because the rest of the episode's so busy being good.
The thing that's interesting about this is that, like, it's not just a cliffhanger because someone's gonna shoot the doctor. It's that Benton's gonna shoot the doctor. We live in this world now.
Three gives no fucks. People are, like, threatening him with death, and he's like, it's fine, don't worry about it. That's one of my favorite things about him, is that he's like, hang on, I gotta finish this. And he's like, okay, but I'm gonna kill you. He's like, that's fine. You're not going to, and I'm not gonna stress out about it.
But that's the end of episode 3. We're now into episode 4, which I've called The Sideways Slip. Because the doctor says that he has slipped sideways 50 fucking times this serial.
I mean, it's a very hard thing to explain, and he's got terminology and he's gonna use it.
There's a one point where he's like, when he eventually does get back to the real world, spoilers, he's like, I guess I did was I, and he dramatically pauses, and I went, slip sideways? And he went, slip sideways. I was like, yep, god damn it, stops. He's so very proud of that slip sideways thing. But anyway, Liz stops Benton because she's like, it's procedure. Don't shoot him yet.
You haven't filled out all the right paperwork.
And she's like, let him fix the thing. Maybe he knows what he's doing. Which seems kind of...
Which is not a good call. Like, from her perspective.
Yeah.
But again, like, in this era of the show, the doctor is always right. So if you think the doctor's right, you're right.
So he fixes the thing and he's like, the only way to completely fix things is we've got to reverse everything, which that is the plan. They're going to reverse the drilling.
They have to reverse all the equipment.
This is like reverse the polarity to the extreme.
That's Three's catchphrase. That comes from Three. I don't know if he ever actually says it. I forget.
Oh, he definitely said reverse the polarity, I think, in Silurians.
That's the doctor that phrase is most associated with.
And his reversal plan works, so cool. And he's like, cool, maybe you'll give me a medal, posthumous, fuck. Maybe
after he dies.
Yes. Posthumously. Oh, and there's a scene where Stallman is threatening the doctor, and to indicate how evil he is, he's messing with his sunglasses, and he's just lifting one arm up and down. And that's it.
To emphasize
I'm evil.
His evil intent. He's threateningly opening and closing his sunglasses.
His tiny, tiny sunglasses that are practically useless as at the thing that sunglasses are used for.
Well, and he wears them inside.
I think that's why. I think they're inside sunglasses.
Would that be like light bulb glasses?
That's what they're for. They're for looking at a light bulb. When you look up at the ceiling because you want to see what's on the ceiling, because you don't know, maybe it's a monster, but you don't want to like hurt your eyes on the light bulb. So you use your sunglasses to cover up the light bulb.
So the doctor's like telling Brig, this guy's evil. Make him take his gloves off. And he does take his gloves off. But his hand is bandaged. He's like, I burnt myself earlier. I'm fine. Stop worrying about me. Worry about the doctor. Because he's like, I want to kill him. Like, we have to question him. He's like, nah, just hurry up. Because I want him dead.
I like how he just like, he pinned all his hopes on that glove strategy. Because he's like, it worked for OJ. And I can make OJ Simpson references. Because last year we talked about OJ all the time. Even though it happened like 20 years previously.
Is that because of that American Crime Story show?
American Crime Story and like a documentary that won an Oscar? Yeah, for some reason, we all decided that we wanted to talk about it again. Like late night comedians were like, had to like go into their vaults and dig out the OJ jokes. And I was one of them.
Congratulations. Welcome to the ranks, sir. So the doctor gets taken to a cell. Liz starts questioning him again, but she's more nice this time. And I think this maybe at this point that he's like, you have a mind of your own. He's trying to convince her to be the Liz that he knows. But she leaves and there's a body in the cell next to him, which is Waluigi. But then we get a quick jaunt back over to the other universe.
Disco ball transition.
Where basically nothing happens except to reiterate, this is still a real universe. Keith is like, I'm going to go leave. To London. I'm like, we knew this.
And more importantly, Liz is devastated. Liz is so worried. Like, the main thing that seems to be going on is that, like, everyone's trying to figure stuff out, but the doctor's not there, and Liz is mostly just upset that the doctor is gone.
But it's not technically a scene we need.
No. I wonder about things like this, because there's lots of times when you do a thing where, like, a character gets put into, like, an alternate universe or whatever. It's kind of a narrative question of, do you cut away from it? And it kind of depends on the story whether or not cutting away from it is the right choice. Like, when I watched Get Out, I love his buddy. Yeah, he works at the airport, the TSA. Like, every once in a while, we'll cut to him. And, like, he's great, but also, like...
in a different movie?
Yeah, and it kills the kind of claustrophobic vibe that the... The thing is that, like, if you need your alternate universe or scary situation to be claustrophobic, cutting away from it kind of kills that. So if we want to feel like the doctor is stuck and feel the doctor's, like, stuckness, we can't cut away from it.
And I will say, at least in Get Out, it's advancing a plot. Nothing really happens here. So anyway, we go back. Waluigi wakes up, starts moaning and groaning. So the doctor's like, hey, come in here. There's a sick guy. And the unit guy comes in. Waluigi attacks him and then comes towards the doctor, bends the bars of the cell, gets to the doctor. The doctor throws a mattress on him, goes out through the door that was opened in the other guy's cell, and locks him in. But he can bend bars.
It's the most confusing, frustrating thing I've ever seen.
And the monster does just stop.
He's like, oh, he locked it.
He can bend the bars.
He can bend those bars. Who knows if he can bend those bars?
Guess not.
I guess we'll never know. Not gonna try. I got lucky one time. Who knows if I'm gonna get lucky again. Best play it safe.
So the doctor, instead of being like, there, look, there's a monster in here, he just leaves, which is fair. I mean, they're all Nazis. He dresses up in this radiation suit, gets in the back of a truck. Or he might get in the back of the truck, then put on the radiation suit. I don't remember. But he just gets together with a bunch of other people in radiation suits. And they go into the lab, and they're doing a countdown for the penetration.
They're counting down to penetration zero. And that's amazing.
I giggled every time they said penetration.
Every time.
Every single time.
Every time they say penetration, it's funny. But again, penetration zero is the best.
It is. So the doctor starts messing with, slips away from everybody, starts messing with stuff. But the brig catches him. But then the doctor reveals that he's himself. And he's like, the planet is screaming. We have to stop this attack.
Again, that's just the sort of nonsense that John Pertwee regularly says with authority.
He sells it. I'll give him that.
There's a moment in this episode, well, he does it a lot, but there's a moment in this episode where he just, like, puts his hands in his pockets and he leans on a wall.
No, that was when he was in the cell talking to Liz. He just, like, leans against the bars.
He does that a lot.
And he's like, I guess you're playing nice cop now.
When I want, and I always see him do that, and I'm like, No, Tony, I get it. I get it. That's a good look.
But I think Sutton tries to help the doctor, and the doctor starts to get away, but then Stallman pulls a gun on him, and that's the end of the episode. There's a lot of cliffhangers, that is. Somebody pulls a gun on the doctor.
It's a cliffhanger that I feel like with this era of the show, they go to a lot, but like the thing about it is the more that you do a cliffhanger on someone holding a gun at someone, the more it seems like they've been awkwardly holding a gun at someone for longer than they should have. It's always, that's the cliffhanger, and they come back and it's like, he's still holding the gun. And it's like, why haven't you shot him already? It seems like every time someone is holding a gun at someone for a cliffhanger, it must mean that they're considering the moral weight of shooting someone. Because that's the only reason you don't immediately shoot.
I'm just giving enough time for someone to say no. It's like that whole wedding thing. Speak now or forever hold your peace. They're giving you that moment. But that's the end of episode 4. We're now into episode 5, which I have called Penetration 0.
Oh, yes.
I much prefer Penetration 69.
Ooh.
You're both the worst. Just the worst.
So how does the doctor get out of this situation?
He just falls down. Out of it by giving no fucks.
He falls down. The earth screams / shakes, and everyone falls down. Stuff's exploding. There's ooze. It's a whole thing.
The Earth Screams would have been a good title for this serial. I'd be into that.
Yeah, that would have been better than Inferno. The Earth Screams of Death.
That sounds like a book that I want to read. Watching this serial, it occurred to me, like, at this point, what I was wondering was, like, what is the thing narratively that going to an alternate universe gets you? And, like, I realize what it is that it sells the stakes of this thing. Because we have to see everything go catastrophically wrong.
Like, to the point of no return, even.
And also, and you cannot undersell this, Brig without a mustache.
It's hard to sell, like, the stakes of these things a lot of the times. It's hard to sell, like, if you don't do this thing, the consequences will be, like, catastrophic. But, like, this time we actually get to see that.
We get to see everything go to shit, and there's no fixing it.
Everybody in that universe just dies.
Spoilers, but yeah. Like, I think even the doctor says this could be worse than an atomic blast.
Yes.
Because it's going to destroy, like,
no, he doesn't say this could be worse than an atomic blast. He said, what you will unleash here will make an atomic blast feel like a light breeze. That's the line.
The reason he brings that up, well, first off, the doctor and Sutton go into the area and, like, radiation suits to take care of the problem, but Stallman comes in and, like, hits Sutton over the back of the head with, like, a crowbar or something, takes his mask off trying to kill him. Then the doctor and Stallman start fighting, but they're both wearing radiation suits. I looked away for like a half second and looked back, and I was like, I don't know who is who anymore.
I don't know how you couldn't tell. They were helpfully labeled.
I know one had a big thing that said Stallman on
it. A giant name tag, like, bigger than the size of his chest.
There's no reason for it to be that big, other than we have to, at a distance, be able to know which one is Stallman. And he's the only one wearing one, because he's the only one we need to know. Because
Sutton already has his helmet off at this point, and then he saves the doctor, and then the doctor takes him out. But then Stallman shuts the doors, the blast door, shields. He's basically locked himself in there. And then that's when they're like, they say that the doors could withhold an atomic blast or whatever. And then that's when the doctor says his fancy line. And then I think, like, they're trying to figure out what to do. Sutton recommends blowing the shaft.
Oh, man. The old shaft.
But the doctor's like, blowing the shaft won't work.
Blowing the shaft never works. And I would know.
Because they've already released too much energy. Things are bad. Waluigi or the scientist, I don't remember which one. One of the green guys.
I was going to say, they're both Primords now.
Comes in and interrupts the exposition. And he is defeated by a fire extinguisher. Because cold is bad for these guys.
They're creatures of heat.
Then we got like another romance scene.
It's weird. I feel like the implication is that, like, Sutton's like, hey, the world's ending. Want to just bang? You want to just, like, bang it out till the world ends?
She's like, yeah. Right.
If we do it right, we can finish when everyone else does.
And that's weird, because, like, the rest of the episode is just everybody jerking it until the climax.
No, no, sir. No, thank you.
Okay, but you were, like, talking about blowing shafts earlier.
Yeah, but that was funny.
That's fair.
It's great when I do it. I'm still talking about blowing shafts. Nobody liked that. That's all right.
The doctor theorizes that...
I made it weird. It's fine. It happens.
He's like, we may not be able to save this world, but I can maybe save the other world because they might not have progressed as far as this universe has. So help me get my TARDIS working. But they go to the TARDIS console and the Briggs like, give us a demonstration that it actually worked. Like, well, there's enough energy stored up that I can do a little test. And he travels a few seconds into the future.
Which astonishes the Brig, by the way. He's like, what? Where did he go? What just happened?
Wait a minute. This isn't some sort of color separation overlay, is it?
I don't think it was it? No, he traveled into the future.
Oh, yeah, that's what it was.
This is when the Brig is like, you can save us. You can get us out of here. And the doctor's like, no. And the Brig's like, why not? And the doctor's like, because I'm a dick. No. Fuck you guys. No, he's like, it'll cause like a paradox and everything.
A universe destroying.
It wouldn't
paradox.
Be like bringing a bunch of Cybermen and Daleks from another universe into our universe in a big finale. That's fine.
To be fair, I think one of the arcs of the Doctor over time is just learning how much the universe can take. Because like when he started, he was like, don't change a thing. Not one line. And then now he's like, you know what? Go ahead. It's fine.
Time Lord victorious, whatever.
If worse comes to worse, I know how to reboot it.
I feel like the Doctor's with the universe the way you are with your phone. Like when you first get it, you're like, nobody touch it or look at it too hard. And then you're like, yeah,
Then you crack the screen a little bit.
Yeah.
The first time you drop it, you go, and then like, again, it's like, oh, well, I already dropped it.
Like, or it's like when you got your new car and you're like, nobody eats in this. Nothing is to tarnish the pristine nature of this new car.
And then it hails.
And now you're like, just lick the ketchup off of the seat. It's fine. It's just a mess now.
I imagine it's also like a baby.
The first time you drop it, you're like,
but then you realize babies are actually really resilient. They're practically made to be bounced.
If you've learned anything from this podcast, it's please bounce your babies.
Get a couple of them. See how high you can get them. Make a competition out of it.
Can you cut that bit of the podcast out for me? And then when people are like, why don't you two have kids yet? I can just play that. I'll just put it on my phone. This is how I think children work.
No, make them listen to the whole damn podcast. You gotta learn how to promote this.
At the end of it, like, they may not have changed their mind, but they'll stop talking to you.
So, Stallman starts calling through the intercom saying, let me out. And they're like, you locked yourself in there, dumb shit. But, like, they can suddenly open the door now, even though they couldn't before. I guess
Well, they're dumb, too, because they're like, well, let him out. He's gonna die in there. And it's like, guys, he is already dead. Please tell me you're paying attention.
Petra. Is it Petra Williams? Is that her name? Her full name?
Yeah.
Okay, Petra opens the door, revealing a Grinch wolf.
With a name tag that says Stallman.
So you know who it is.
Full on, he looks like just a green werewolf. He's infected other ones in the area, and they come out, and they're like his Grinchettes. So there's all these furry wolfmen, which they just look like werewolves. They look like good werewolves.
I do think there's a thing that they were trying to do this season, where they were trying to go, like, less is more with all their alien designs, where, like, instead of doing all, like, really going full tilt with, like, plastic and bubble wrap, they're just like, no, like, they just kind of look like people but weird. It was very much a lot of people but weird aliens.
I like people but weird aliens.
A lot of times it's more effective. Like, the aliens in Ambassadors of Death are, like, super effective. Again, a lot of it's, like, less rubber spiders or whatever and
giant crab monsters that are so expensive they can't even, and huge they can't even move them.
Exactly. It's more just like, yeah, and it's a lot more effective.
Okay, so like one of them slashes at Benton's face and then we get to see Benton transform and it's actually really fucking awesome. That is a really good transformation scene. It's not quite American Werewolf in London levels, but I also got similar vibes from it. It was really nice. I liked that scene a lot. But they've all locked themselves in a room so they can stay away from the Grinch wolves. And then everyone learns about the TARDIS. The Doctor's like, well, let me tell you a story. Cue disco ball transition. And then we get this scene of Sir Keith on his way to London, learning that his driver's taking him to the middle of nowhere. And
his driver's like really polite about it too. He's like, oh yeah, I just had orders. I'm sorry. I'll take you back now.
And then they get in a wreck.
My favorite thing is that, like, it's really hilarious. It's like, I objected to the order, you know, death. I mean, spoiler alert, not death. But you're meant to think death.
Because he died in this parallel universe.
In the evil universe, like, Stallman totally had Sir Keith killed. Because he's evil. They're sort of vague Nazis. No one ever says Nazi.
Well, no one ever does.
But, like, the one time we hear, like, a radio newscast, there's a guy with a German accent. I feel like that's all you need.
Sir Keith crashes, and then we get the disco ball transition. And the doctor's like, so that's my story. I'm not a fan of these cutaways to the real universe. But that was at least a good way to not have to listen to all the explanation.
Everything we've seen.
The doctor's like, but I have a plan. He's like, if we can just keep these wolves out of our hair. And then the wolves break through. And that's the end of episode 5. We're now into episode 6, which I've called Attack of the Grinch Wolves. When the wolf busts through, it's just his hand. And the doctor fire extinguishes it away. And they're like, he's like, I need to get power to the TARDIS.
What was the fire extinguisher budget on this serial?
Right?
Because they go through so many.
There's a point where they're like, conserve your fire extinguisher. You don't want to run out and then get attacked by wolves. There's a scene where he's running out. And he's like, stop, don't use it. But like, there's fire extinguishers.
He runs past everywhere. Two of them while he's like, running out of the one he has and is like, oh no, I need to conserve it. I'm like, you just ran past one.
They
grab
are everywhere.
It's the brig. Like, the brig's got it and he's spinning them off while they're trying to get power to the TARDIS. And there's like one he ran past. There's another one behind him. And I'm like, will you use those? What's wrong with you?
And my thing is that just practically, fire extinguishers, you only get so many takes before it's empty. I mean, it's Doctor Who. There's not that many takes anyway. But still, there's a lot of takes of people using fire extinguishers.
They might have rigged up special ones. I don't think you can actually spray people with a fire extinguisher.
Really? Because that's how I, like, spend my weekends. That's the only thing that brings me joy.
That and recording this podcast, right?
Yeah, sure.
So while they're still in the room, the doctor's like, we gotta get power. So they're like, we don't even know if there is power. He holds up a handkerchief to the AC. AC's still running.
Should Which drives me crazy because, one, they were like, it is ungodly hot in here. And two, I don't know, I just hate it. I didn't have it to. It just drives me crazy.
Again, he's so smug, but the show agrees with him. He's never smug and wrong.
The plan is to use the fire extinguishers to get to a great big hose in the main lab. Where the coolant is. Then make a run for the control center. They'd spend an awful lot of time in that lab spraying them with the coolant from the hose. Because I guess the doctor has to do something in the lab as well. But like, Brig, Petra, and Liz run outside while they're still futzing with the hose. And the Brig is like ready to just straight up leave.
Which, like, he's evil, but it's fair. He doesn't want to die.
Well, he's gonna die.
He's gonna die anyway. Like, I don't think you can get away from this. Also, when they run outside, everything is red, 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 because it's, I guess, hot. And the end of the world is a-coming. So it fucks up with the sky? When they're spraying them with the hose, then we get another scene back at the regular place, but I don't think anything really happens.
This episode feels really padding. It's a lot of, like, running back and forth between the, like, control thing and the TARDIS and the Doctor's hut. Just, like, running back and forth, being like, oh, we've got power. No, we don't got power. Oh, I've got to go back, but you won't make it. But then she does, and everything turns out fine, except not really, because they're all going to die. It's, like, decently tense, but it's a lot of running back and forth, like, futzing with controls.
That's pretty much all that happens.
That's it. That's the end.
I'm gonna skip forward a lot.
And the doctor says he's not Batman at some point. Yeah, it's like some sort of rocket ship with, like, Batman at the controls. It's not like they've never mentioned other, like, pop cultural things on the show before, but for some reason that felt different.
I think it's because that's one that you know. I've heard of Batman!
Well, the Beatles have been on it, too.
Yeah, I was gonna say, other than the Beatles is the only other time where it felt like, because it feels like a more, even though Batman's been around for, like, a long time, it feels more like a more culturally specific reference. It's like whenever, like, 10 would talk about Harry Potter.
So basically, a bunch of shit happens. They wind up at the garage with the TARDIS console. Williams has rewired the controls so that he should be getting power. Brig pulls a gun because he wants to come with. He tries to shoot Sutton, but his gun is empty?
His gun is empty.
And then they fight. Sutton kicks his ass, by the way. He's like, got him on the ground. He's just punching the shit out of the Brig. And the doctor's like, stop. Jesus, is this how you want to go?
Like, you're about to die anyway. Calm down.
Why don't you two just bang it out?
Yeah, that's what the doctor says.
You know what's amazing about that fight, though, is how satisfying it is to watch the brig get punched out.
Yes.
Which is like, he's a main character.
But you're like, fuck yeah.
Yeah. kick the brig's ass.
He's just so good at being this completely different character.
He's great at being the worst.
But it's not though. I think like in like the prime timeline in the regular universe, he's the most military. Like you guys talked about in an earlier episode about how like the show is doing this weird thing of like the Doctor basically works for the military, but yet the show is being the most explicitly anti-military that it's ever been. I feel like the message of this is that, like, the brig is the most military, therefore he's the most evil.
But you still like the brig, though.
No, you still like him, because, like, again, Nicholas Courtney.
But you also enjoy getting this dumb face punched in. The power comes on, the TARDIS comes to life, Brig is like, I'm fucking coming with you. And then the Doctor's like, it'll be a cosmic disaster. And he pulls a gun on the Doctor. And I was like, the gun doesn't have bullets.
It's not loaded. We already know that.
And then Liz says, it doesn't have any bullets. And then Brig just shoots the gun. And it does have bullets now.
That was his super secret special gun. The one that he keeps in like his shorts by his penis.
By his shaft. But he does not get to shoot the Doctor because Liz shoots the brig. And then he dies, I guess.
And then so does everyone else.
The Doctor, I guess, TARDIS is out of there, and then the doors open, and we see just lava and shit coming right at him. Man, which, that effect was good, of, like, the lava and stuff, like, rolling and all that jazz, you know.
Was it an effect, or was it stock footage?
Could have been stock footage.
It's almost certainly stock.
It looked cool, though, but it didn't match.
Stock footage looked great.
But, you know, the whole color separation overlay thing.
But the integrating the stock footage, not so much.
And that's it. That's the end of the episode. Everybody dies.
Yeah, everyone dies.
For real this time. We always say, and then everybody dies.
Yeah, this isn't a joke. That's how this episode ends.
Everyone dies.
Except for the Doctor.
And that's the end of episode 6. We're now into episode 7, which I've called Reverse the Slideways.
Oh.
Christ. Okay, I'm on board. I'll take it.
But the Doctor makes it. He's back. He's back to the Prime Universe. Do we know for sure? Maybe he's wound up in an even different universe where everything's
slightly different. How would he know?
In this universe, right is left and left is right.
And blonde is brown.
Say such a thing could not be. That makes no sense.
Jesus.
But you're back in the Prime Universe, and Stallman's here. Like, he's talking about Sir Keith again. And at this point, he's called Sir Keith an old woman, like, 5 times. That's, like, his favorite insult. So when he doesn't like Sir Keith, or, like, some, like, he calls them a woman. Like, an old woman.
Or they're acting womanly.
You're not a strong man like me and my receding hairline.
And my lack of eyebrows.
Or any kind of judgment.
And the Doctor is passed out, also. He is...
He's in a coma.
He's in a coma.
Which Liz finds him and is, like, so happy. So relieved.
She was so worried about him and cares a lot about him. I also noticed that, like, because of this, like, this season is, like, bookended with scenes of, like, the Liz and the brig looking down at an unconscious 3.
Nice. Which, the brig's like, I get a doctor to look at him.
And Liz is like, bitch, I am a doctor.
And then Tony was like, of, like, a doctor?
Like, of medicine?
And then I was like, she did help the doctor figure out a cure for that virus. So it's plausible.
Is he already also said the thing? Because at one point the doctor is talking about how, like, it's like, have they done the thing, saying that he's making a lot of mistakes. And he goes, if he makes one now, it'll be a Lulu.
He did. Oh God. A Lulu.
What is a Lulu? What does that mean?
It's a mistake.
A particularly Lulu mistake.
Thanks for clearing that up.
And then the doctor does wake up and says, like, this is what's happening. Everything that's happening is happening. He's talking about it, and then the brig gets a call and is like, that's what's happening. Holy shit. And so the doctor's like, you gotta reverse everything. Reverse all the stuff, like he did in the other universe.
I love how, like, he wakes up from his coma and thinks about stuff and has, like, this whole, like, realization about, like, stuff because he went to a parallel universe. And he's like, so this and this and this is this. So free will is not an illusion after all. That's a thing that he says.
Like, because there are multiple parallel, there's an infinite amount of universes, which
where
means
every choice happens, yeah.
Which to me means free will is an illusion. You're just one of an infinite probabilities. I've reached the opposite conclusion.
But, like, it's not determinism. Like,
it's saying there is choices to be made.
Yeah, it's not, like, predestined. But it is, because everything has to happen. Every choice is predestined.
But, like, the idea being that you never know what universe you're in.
That doesn't mean that you chose it freely.
What if there's someone choosing what universe you're in?
Then you don't have free will. This is important stuff.
Because, like, in my head, it's a function of location. The universes are stacked and organized in order of, like, it's slowly getting different.
But, or it's also, it's more like universes are constantly branching off. And, like, I don't think it's that organized. I think it's more just, like, everything happens somewhere. But right now, only one thing is going to happen to you.
Because you're not important. Nothing matters. I want to say when the doctor does wake up, I was like, please make a mustache joke. Please make a mustache joke. And he made a mustache joke, and I was so pleased. He's like, oh, you do look better with that. He checks his own, like, pulse and his hearts, and he's like, well, that one's beating a tad bit faster than the other one, but that's to be expected. Like, they know.
That's my favorite line. That's what happens when you travel to a parallel universe, you know.
What do your hearts get slightly out of sync. There's a lot of research on this.
Keith also shows up, and he's not dead. He just has a broken arm. And he's like, ugh, we can change the pattern. Rush, he's like, we gotta stop him. So he rushes over and just starts beating the shit out of the computer with, like, a club or something.
Promptly gets arrested.
Taken away.
It's like, that was not the way to go about doing that.
He just, like, runs in like, I have free will. God damn it. We won't make a Lulu.
So Keith tells Stallman, the minister wants to have a talk with you. And he's like, all right, fine. But after I penetrate that crust.
But after I blow everything up, though.
And he's like, getting things, making. And he's also like, tuning the fuck out. He just like, makes these like, really dumb, weird faces while like, loud bells play or something. And they're like, what's wrong? And he's like, nothing. Make it hotter, damn it. Because like, he's even like, man, it's cold in here. Turn up the heat. And everyone else is like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, turn up the goddamn heat. I run this place. But, yeah, he's getting worse. And he orders everyone out. He closes the door. He locks himself in like he did before. But the doctor is being led away. And he karate chops his guards. Runs off. And then he bumps into one of the green guys on the tank again. Extinguishes him. Again. And then we get this, like, oh, weird scene of, like, Stallman's alone in the thing. And he, like, dips his hand in the ooze and just rubs it all over his face.
It's really unsettling.
Did we already get past the bit where he, like, shoved other dudes' faces in the ooze, too? I think that happened in the other episode when he was locked in the first thing. He's just, like, shoving a dude's face in the ooze. And I was like, this is making me uncomfortable.
He's got a full-on ooze fetish.
The shaft's ooze is all over his face.
No.
Oh, ooze.
Then the door opens, revealing full-on Stallwolf, and he gets extinguished.
I mean, I assume it's Stallwolf. He's not wearing a helpful name tag.
I would like to point out, too, at this point, like, the doctor's been arrested. Before he turns into a wolf, everyone's like, the computer says that the whole Earth might blow up, but the computer's not conclusive. So
yeah,
because
Stallman
know...
called it oversensitive at one point.
Yeah, but like other people are like, yeah, we don't know if we're gonna shut everything down. And then he turns into a werewolf, and everyone's like, oh yeah, shutting it down's probably a good idea. That's the deciding factor. It's not the computer. It's not the experts. It's like, the guy who is telling us to do it is now a wolf, so
yeah,
maybe we should stop.
So they do. The doctor and Sutton go in and stop it. There's a countdown that doesn't stop at one. It stops at like 35 seconds. I thought that was interesting. And then everybody hugs and everything's fine.
Which again, 5 minutes ago, they weren't convinced anything bad was actually going to happen.
To be fair though, I feel like if I turned into a wolf right now, you would think something bad was happening.
Fair point.
It's not a thing that normally happens. It's the sort of thing that once it happens, you have to reassess a lot of things.
My point is, if you have a computer readout that's like, hey, if you do this, the world might explode, you should be like, maybe we should stop for 5 minutes.
I think I would try to get it to play tic-tac-toe with itself.
Oh, like in that movie, Inferno.
That won't stop the world from exploding.
Oh, no, it does. Have you not seen War Games?
Actually, I haven't.
That's the climax of the film of War Games.
I mean, I know because I've been alive, but I've not seen it.
It's that.
They're going to fill in the shaft, and they're going to shut everything down. But before they do, the doctor's like, can I use the reactor one last time? And they're like, sure, buddy.
Why not? You save the world.
By the way, also, Sutton and Williams ran off together. They're a thing. They're an item.
Yeah, he's driving her in his car, and then someone says, nothing like a nice happy ending. Because that's where we are.
We're in the good universe. I think they say something about, like, the Briggs probably going to go back to a unit or whatever, and he's like, nah, I'm going to stick around to help mop some things up. And then the doctor's like, pity. And then he, like, just starts chewing the Brig a new asshole. Like, taking out all of his frustrations from the evil brig out on the good brig.
And presumably all of his frustrations since the Silurians. This, I feel like this ending is supposed to be, like, something like the kind of conclusion of their that sort of arc.
He's like, fuck you and your fucking military, fuck y'all, y'all guys. And then, like, TARDIS is out.
And then 5 minutes later materializes in a garbage can outside of the garage.
He's like, hey, Brig, you want to help me get some people together to help move it? And he's like, remember that thing that just happened where you called me a shithead? How about you go fuck yourself?
He has, like, no facial expression, and yet all you can see is rage?
Also
How does
a
he
smirk.
Do that?
There's a smirk, too.
There's a smirk and a twinkle and a bundle of rage.
But he's not making almost, he's almost making, has, like, no facial expression, and I want to know how he does it.
Nicholas Courtney.
It's amazing.
He's like, yeah, I'll help you, whatever. And they head out together, and Liz starts laughing. And that is the last time we will ever see her.
What?
Yep.
What?
Yep.
What? What do you mean? Ever?
She shows up in, like, the Five Doctors. But that's it.
But she...
And that is it. That is the end of the serial. That is the end of...
What?
Yeah,
yes.
She does not come back. She gets... They have a line in the next episode.
She gets unceremoniously written off.
I wish you guys could see Tony's face right now.
They wrote her off because... Basically, because she was too smart for her own good.
I mean, I knew that, so I've already felt anger about that.
You didn't know this is the last, though?
No, and I didn't know they didn't even, like, give her a fucking ending.
Nope, that's it. She laughs, haha, goodbye. I hate it so much. The thing that pisses me off the most is the thing that they say in the next episode is that, like, she left because, like, the doctor doesn't need an equal. He needs someone to hand him his test tubes. Like, that's kind of basically the line.
Ugh.
That made it sound like she got tired of just being, like, his assistant or whatever. That's kind of the implication of it. But, like, this whole time in this serial, she is so worried about him. I kept bringing it up, like, she's so worried about him. They have the best chemistry. I love Liz Shaw so much. Liz Shaw is, like, one of the most underrated companions in all of Doctor Who.
I thought we would have more time with her.
No, this is it.
What? I had no warning of this.
I told Chris not to tell you because I wanted this reaction.
The reason that I wanted to be on Inferno was I wanted the chance to talk about Liz. That was, like, the main reason I wanted to come on this serial. And then, like, 5 minutes before the podcast, Joe was like, hey, don't mention that this is Liz's last serial. I was like, oh, okay.
Well, but do you...
Yeah, Tony's face right now, guys.
Told you it'd be worth it.
It is a little bit. But, like, can we talk about Liz Shaw for a bit?
Yeah, because she's fucking the best!
She is amazing. It seems to me that there are, like, a couple of, like, Doctor Who companion archetypes. There's, like, the naive kind of girl one. Her youth is usually emphasized. She screams a lot. There's the kind of sassy one that sort of argues with the Doctor, but, like, isn't, like, the Doctor's equal, necessarily, in terms of intelligence or anything, but, like, is there to, like, call him out on stuff and be kind of sassy and funny. And then there's the one that's, like, super capable and is, like, really smart. Those are the best, and we don't get enough of those. And, like, Liz Shaw is, like, one of the best ones. Liz Shaw is, like, the closest thing that we get to, like, Barbara again.
Or Zoe.
Zoe. It's an underrated archetype. It's, like, Liz Shaw, it's Barbara, it's Martha Jones, it's Clara Oswald.
Man, Martha Jones is an underrated companion.
Kind of calm, smart, no-nonsense, I got this shit character. And Liz is just one of the best ones. And she doesn't get to be on the show enough. She gets written out because of the thing that makes her great. And that is the most frustrating thing. Tony is devastated. She is just sitting back, shaking her head, sighing.
I knew that this happened, but I assumed, one, there would be more of her.
There would be at least, like, a episode of her leaving.
And yes, they would give her an ending. They wouldn't dodo her out.
I will say, at least the last serial she did was really good. And
oh,
good
God,
for
this serial's
her.
Amazing.
But at the same time, though, a lot of the sort of development for her is a her that's kind of not her.
The alternate universe her is becoming who Liz is in the Prime Universe. So I think it's like, this is who she is through the lens of some, of an alternate universe character of her, showing that, like, at her core, this is who she is. And I think that's fun.
Yeah, it's like a good episode about the character of Liz Shaw that unfortunately doesn't feature the character of Liz Shaw enough.
She actually said that she preferred playing the evil Liz, because she's like, yeah, I was kind of getting boring playing the other character. She got to do more stuff as evil Liz.
I mean, everyone likes playing the evil one. I like playing evil Chris Cherry.
I don't know. I thought she was great. I do feel like she didn't get enough to do, like, the entirety of her run, though. Like, there's a lot of scenes it's just, she's just sitting there in a chair while other characters are talking.
She is just kind of handing him his test tubes sometimes.
But she does it with such poise, and she says badass things.
When she does get to do things, it's so great. And her and Three have great chemistry. And also, like, his whole reason for staying. One of his, like, caveats was, she has to work with me. And to just throw that away, shitty.
Don't care for it, don't like it. I like Joe, and actually...
I thought you meant me.
Nah, fuck you.
Evil Cherry!
I like watching next season now, I'm liking Joe a lot more than I normally do, where I've always been kind of iffy on Joe, but like, Joe is great too. She's also great, and it's not her fault that she's not Liz.
We've actually already had, like, a fan write into the show, like, listen... I know you probably know what happens to Liz. Please don't hate Joe because of it, because she's the best and I love her, and lots of people hate on her for this reason.
But we've actually already seen Joe and enjoyed her, so.
She's so sweet.
We saw the Sarah Jane episode.
She's a very sweet character, and she's more capable than she gets credit for. She just, like, she's written to be kind of the anti-Liz. You know, but she gets to be very capable in her own way.
So does she like Wesley out of it?
She doesn't quite Wesley out of it. I think it's more just like she can't be too incompetent because she's a character in a story that has to do things. But yeah, she's written to be kind of, yeah, the sort of thing that Liz wasn't. But she's delightful.
Which, I mean, to be fair, is probably something I would want out of a companion, because I want to have a completely different companion, you know?
They do have a different dynamic. It's a lot more kind of paternal dynamic.
Final thoughts?
Ooh, a live one!
It's one of the most smartly constructed Doctor Who serials ever. All the storytelling choices are really smart. It knows how to set stuff up. It's really good. It's setting up. It's lots of good setups and payoffs. It knows what it's doing when it shows you Evil Brick. It knows when to reveal Evil Brick. It knows, like, how to set stuff up. It could get to the parallel universe a little bit faster, but, like, it lulls you into a false sense of security. It keeps you in the serial long enough that, like, when it happens, you really don't see it coming. It has enough plot before it that you don't think that this is going to happen. You don't think that, like, okay, well, this isn't enough to be a story.
It's also like one of those times where you're like, oh, okay, I know where this is going. This is going to be the plot. It lulls you into thinking that.
And it just, yeah, it makes a lot of smart choices. Again, I like that the central thing is about fixing the TARDIS. I love Liz in it. I love Evil Brig. I love, yeah, like, Three in it. It's a really good way to go out. It's probably his best serial, Three's.
So it's all downhill from here.
But, like, not by much. Like, a while back on Tumblr, I made an argument that, like, Peter Capaldi so far has been the only Doctor that doesn't have a bad season. And someone was like, John Pertwee never had a bad season. I was like, maybe. And like, but like that, there's a decent argument that his run is really consistent.
I wonder if too, that's because this is the first time that we've had like a very specific, this is what the show is. Whereas before it's like, anything can happen. But this time it's like, anything happens on Earth with units.
That's another reason that it feels a lot like Russell T. Davies' Doctor Who too. It's very earthbound and it's very kind of ensemble character-y. I kind of get the feeling that this might be his favorite version of the show. Yeah, that's me for Inferno.
Chris Cherry, signing off.
Chris Cherry, speaking on behalf of Inferno.
And next up, it's Tony.
Oh, thanks. That was nice. I will say, I think this is one of the best episodes of the season. I don't know about Three, because we haven't gotten there yet. But what I've seen so far, this is definitely one of the best. I do think it's weird that the monsters aren't ever really explained or named even. They're kind of secondary to the plot. And once you said that they were kind of put in to pad for time, I was like, oh, okay.
That and the Venusian karate were both added in to pad it out.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there was definitely a point where I was like, wait, are the monsters... You get to like episode 6 and you're like, is that getting explained? Or are they just like, nope, that's a bad thing that happens when you touch weird goo shit. Really, that kind of works. If they had like taken another episode to, like, explain what they are, and, like, it'd have been boring.
I don't necessarily think it needs to be in the serial, though. I think it would work perfectly fine without the monsters.
But it also doesn't break it.
No, yeah. They're, like, it works just fine. It's Doctor Who. There's some monsters. I think, like, the Doctor going, like, I heard a sound like Krakatoa is all you need.
It's silly, but it's fine. But the episode where you get dropped into this parallel universe, when we were watching it, we were like, wait, what? We're doing what now? Okay, sure, fine. And also, I was, like, thrilled because we got to have, like, weird costumes and stuff that we didn't get to have in a long time. Oh. It seemed like the closest thing to, like, everyone has weird lab coats that look slightly different than you'd expect, and weird glasses. I was like, God, yes. I've missed this, like, everyone's human, but they're wearing a weird fucking outfit. That's one of my favorite parts about Doctor Who, especially Classic Who. Of, like, check out these weird sunglasses we found at a thrift store. This is what the future is like. And I had no idea about Liz Shaw, and I'm very upset.
I will say I'm glad that I didn't know that it was her last serial going in, because I feel like that would have overshadowed a lot of what made this serial so great.
Yeah. But anytime Doctor Who does something to you where you're like, wait, what are you doing? Wait, why now? It's gonna be a good episode. That's it. Those are my final thoughts.
I mean, definitely probably was a little padded out, but, like, they did it well. Everything works. Like you said, it lulls you into thinking it's one thing, and then suddenly we're in an alternate universe. There was a lot of, like, I would think things were going one way, and then something would happen to change things up, or just explain what I was concerned about. Like, the brig pulls a gun out, and I'm like, it doesn't have any bullets. And then someone says, it doesn't have any bullets. And he's like, yes, it does. Those kind of moments I really enjoyed. Or, like, even when we get to the alternate universe, and I'm like, well, there's not a lot different. The brig and Liz are completely different, but everything else is kind of the same.
The plot's the same.
Yeah, like, the Stallman's still a dick, blah, 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 blah. Everybody's still kind of themselves except for the brig and Liz. I'm like, why would you do that? And then it's because then you get that point of no return. This universe is fucked. The plot then becomes he has to save the main universe. And I'm like, oh, okay. That's why they did this. That's why it's not, like, completely different. It's because it's relating to the prime universe. And then that's really good, I think. Because there's a lot of, like, alternate universe episodes where nothing of consequence happens in them.
It's just like, what if your favorite characters had blue hair?
Oh, this person's married to this person? Weird.
Yeah, Star Trek got super guilty of that. Especially in Deep Space Nine, they got really into, like, a lot of times alternate universes are just excuses for the actors and writers to play around. Whereas there was, like, a good story reason for doing this.
Yeah, there's consequences of it. There's a reason. It's not just filler or just fucking around. I mean, there is definitely is fucking around of you get to see the brig be evil. But instead of just playing that for, like, oh, look, it's the brig being evil, it's still a character. It's not just a joke, really. That also happens of just, it's the complete opposite of that character. Look how opposite he is. But there's actually a point where you forget that this is a...
that it's the brig?
Yeah. You buy him as a completely separate character.
Oh,
you buy
God,
Liz.
He's doing such a good job of it.
You don't really think back to the other brig. You're not comparing them that much. You've just bought into this as another character.
Can I say this isn't something that they did? I mean, like, it makes sense that it's not something that they did, but it's something that, like, the episode made me think about. Mm-hmm. Which is, like, if I went to a parallel universe and I was evil in it, I'd be like, how many choices away am I from becoming a dick? I need to know.
There is a moment where they cut back, one of the few times they cut back to the prime universe that I think is sort of telling. There's one of these episodes that's mostly shouting. There's, like, one episode that's just, like, evil Briggs shouting at everybody all the time.
Oh, yeah, and everybody's getting super annoyed at him, too.
There's definitely a point where everyone just stops listening.
And they cut back to Prime Brig, right? And then Prime Brig gets pissed and starts shouting at, like, Benton. And it's this kind of moment of, like, they're not that different.
To be fair, though, he yells at Benton and then smirks. I did a good job there.
He's very proud of himself for yelling at Benton. Yeah, he has, like, this moment of, like, ha.
I could be evil.
And also, I mean, they've been toying that with that since the Silurians, really.
Yeah.
This is, like, getting to see that come to fruition. Like, what if he did go full on evil? And I feel like, yeah, that leads into the Doctor being like, you're a shitbag. Peace out.
Nope.
Just kidding. Can I still hang out at your labs? But no, all in all, I loved it. I thought it was great. It was a really good serial. Yeah, I do think the Primords are probably a little tacked on, but not bad. And also the transformation, the one specifically with Benton, was really good. And the makeup was really good, too. They didn't look shitty, which they could have. That's my final thoughts. I liked it. I'm really sad to see Liz go. Like I said, I'm glad I didn't know this was our last one, because it's good to just watch it and enjoy it for what it is. And it's a really good serial for...
Yeah.
I don't like that they drop her unceremoniously, but at least her last one was good.
And I think it's good to know before going into Terror of the Autons.
Because we would have just been upset about it the entire time. Like, what the fuck? Where's Liz?
So now you get to make your peace with it now.
Chris, any plugs?
Here it is. Relativity still exists. Relativitywebseries.wordpress.com. Go watch it if you haven't. Go watch it if you have. That still exists. Brains still exists. Go watch that too.
Brains, the web series. If you just Google Brains, it's not going
to
help.
Yeah, exactly. Go to brainswebseries.com. Watch that there. Go find Brains on Starable and review us. That's a great website to review us on. Relativity 2. Also, like right now, as we're recording this, Ray Friesen's webcomic The Foggiest is updating with my storyline. You can lead a horse to water. That's happening right now. By the time this goes out, it'll probably not be my storyline anymore.
Probably be mine.
Yeah, it'll probably be Joe's. Go look at the current page of Joe's webcomic, and then go back and then read all of mine.
Which is half of your story.
Yeah, just the first half we're doing right now. It kind of, it ends on a cliffhanger. Someone points a gun at someone for like a long time.
It's a comic, so you could just stare at it as long as you want to.
Yeah, watch that. Watch all the sketches that I made with you at minipineapple.com.
Ooh, nice. We have some plugs. Well, first off, yeah, check out The Foggiest. My comic might be up. I'm not sure. It's either Chris's or mine. Mine is called Ghost Town. It's a Western horror. It's a little fucked up, so warning. Also, May 5th through the 7th is Wholanta in Atlanta. It's a convention, Doctor Who convention. Colin Baker is going to be there. Camille Cadori. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right. But Rose's mom is going to be there. Jamie Matheson is going to be there.
Guess who else is going to be there?
Wait, Jamie Matheson, the writer?
Yes.
That's like legit. I was doing like kind of a joke gasp each time. But that's legitimately really cool. You have to talk to Jamie Matheson.
What about Colin Baker? He's the doctor.
Yeah, but Jamie Matheson is a good writer.
This tells me so much about you.
Like, Colin Baker's really cool. I want to meet Colin Baker. But Jamie Matheson wrote Mummy on the Orient Express and Flatline. All my heroes are writers.
Well, then come to the convention.
Yeah.
May 5th through the 7th. Also, Tony and I will be there, and we are going to do a screening of Dalek's Invasion Earth 2150 AD, and then we're going to do a live podcast about it. And if Chris is there, he's going to do it too.
No, I'm going to be talking to Jamie Matheson.
You can do both, motherfucker. So come check us out, please. Don't let us talk to an empty room. You can go to wholanta.com and buy tickets and all that jazz. If you like this episode, you can check out more on watchyourassalon.com. And be sure to rate and comment on our iTunes. Thanks to iSpyScience for leaving a comment. You're the best.
We love you.
A whole bunches.
Yeah.
If you'd like to help us out even more, go to watchyourassalon.com/support. And there you'll find a link to our Patreon page, which you can get to just by going to patreon.com/watchathon. And there you can donate a monthly amount to get all kinds of rewards, like videos of us watching the episodes, uncut video of the podcast records where you can see Tony's incredibly sad face when she finds out that Liz is not going to be in the show anymore, and day early episodes. Also on our support page is a link to our Amazon wish list, where you can sponsor an episode of the podcast by purchasing the corresponding serial on DVD for us. We'll mention you in the podcast and put your name on our Friends of Rassilon page. Speaking of, special thanks to Matt Golden of mgoldentumbles.tumblr.com for sponsoring this episode.
Good, thanks, Matt.
You are still shiny. Tune in next time when we talk about Terror of the Autons with special guest Vincent E. L.
Hey, I know him.
Me too.
Me three.
So that's it. Bye.
Bye. I love you.
Keep calm and wrestle on.
Please. Just consider it.
Bye too.
I didn't go backwards into the past or forwards into the future. I slipped sideways.